Spoiler alert, I watch a lot of Bravo, and when I'm not watching Bravo, I'm sitting in the cloth having a moment of spiritual growth, and when that's not happening, I'm living here in New York where there is a lot to do and not a lot of time to do it. The last thing that I want to be thinking about, let alone worrying about, is my hair. Now, I have wavy hair naturally. It also has color processing, which is surprising because I am a spiritual blonde. And as a result, I don't want to have to worry about frizz. That's why I love Way's anti-frizz cream. It works for my hair texture. It works for having wavy hair. It smells great. There are notes of bergamot, Italian lemon. You guys know I just went to Italy. It was for moments like this, violet and more. Having used a lot of products in my hair in the past, I don't like a heavy feeling, especially when you have wavy hair. That's incredibly important, which is why I love the anti-frizz cream. It makes my hair look like me just a little bit better. Way's new anti-frizz cream provides immediate frizz control that lasts up to 72 hours. It helps reduce and repair split ends. And according to a consumer perception study, 90% of participants agreed that their hair looks less frizzy. And I would like to know what that consumer perception study has to say about some original cast members of The Real Housewives of New York. You'll be way obsessed with Way's bestsellers. They're leave-in conditioner, detox shampoo, hair oil, gloss, and so much more. Frizz-free up your schedule with Way. Go to theouai.com and enter promo code Andy for 15% off any product. That's theouai.com, promo code Andy. C'est bon.
I'm a Jew talking housewives on Shabbat. All I can say is holla!
I'm dead inside.
I like that I was literally rolling my eyes as I said it. I can't do it. Apologies.
Heather Chala Thompson with us.
I know. I literally apologies to Heather Thompson, who is a delightful person.
I had a rough couple weeks.
Yeah. I cannot imagine saying that sincerely. Holla. Like, I obviously have my like little Hebrew spin, but like, holla, I just can't imagine in the way that she says it with her vocal inflection. I can't imagine doing that thing so many times that it becomes a part of me.
I mean, that's like how Carrot Top's based his entire career. Like, it's like so natural to him, but for us, it's hard to even imagine. Well, the reason I said I'm dead inside, Heather, I talked to Heather Gay this week from Salt Lake.
Yes.
And she said that was her original, like, that's the line she pitched them was, I'm dead inside. I'm dead inside. So whatever happens now is just okay. Like, it was like something, I'm trying to think of this, but it started with, I'm dead inside. So whatever happens from this point on is all good. And like, she was like, well, that's how I really feel. I'm like, there was no way they would ever approve that. There was just no way. But I was like, what a great, like, I'm dead inside, you know, and spinning around with a dress.
I cannot imagine Heather saying it, but I love that kind of like dry, dark humor, which hopefully we'll get to see from her second season.
And she said it was based around, like, she said it was like, cause like she didn't count on the divorce and everything that went with that. So it's like that thing of like, she mentioned it multiple times of just like, that kind of killed me. And at this point, I'm kind of like that thought of living on borrowed time almost of like, mm-hmm. you know, and I kind of commiserated with that because I've been through divorce and it was, you know, you just don't ever expect it. So at this point, like my life is like, I didn't expect to be doing a podcast about Bravo. My life is so completely off track. So at this point, it's like, well, whatever happens is cool. You know, like you know, when things are like kind of so off course that you're like, it starts to be like, kind of cool, like mm-hmm. that's what I thought she meant, but also she said she's dead inside, you know. Hi folks, hi Andy. Hi Andy. What's up?
I'm so into all of this and like the energy already. I'm obsessed with you guys. We're just going full all in from the jump, which I love. It's Andy's Girls. It's episode 225. And I'm so excited to be joined by one of my absolute favorite people. You know him as the host of So Bad It's Good with Ryan Bailey. Mr. Ryan Bailey, how are you?
225. I said, hey, could I be on episode 225? Because that number means so much to me. So this is exciting for me. Hello, everybody. Hello. How is everybody? Hello, Andy's Girls Nation. No, for real. This is you are privileged to be listening to, not because of me, but because of Sarah.
Wow.
So I am happy. Thank you for letting my ears, your
wow.
ears listen. No, that was
wow,
all complimentary.
Ryan, wow.
It was compliments to your
audience.
I know.
Say other wonderful things. I'm so into this. It is a holy night, Ryan. It is Shabbat.
Shabbat
which
Shalom.
Someone reminded me. I was like, oh my God, that's still a thing. How are you?
I'm good as can be. I'm on a Kathy Hilton high this week, but there are lows, you know, like I'm having lows. There's of course the Real Housewives of New York situation at the end. I'm a low with that, a high with Kathy. Like there's, I'm all over the place. And my personal life doesn't even really factor into any of this anymore. Like, do you find like there, I don't even know like what, like do you even have a personal life anymore? I feel like it's all intertwined with Bravo, where I really picture somewhere like Kyle is like, wow, Ryan really didn't have a good week. This like, I feel like they're talking about me the way I'm talking about them. Like Kathy's like, I'm obsessed with Ryan. I'm obsessed with him.
Such a good question. I am attempting to get back a personal life. This is so dumb, but I did a hour and a half long Patreon episode with Tom from Dumpster Dive.
Tom Hamlet. I love him. Yeah.
Who I love. We had like an extended conversation about life as blondes, like just living the blonde life. And the fact that one of my favorite forms of like self-care is a cut and color. I love spending a couple hours in a hair salon, shooting the shit with my favorite people, you know, getting drunk on free shamps. And I'm so excited to do that again in a couple weeks. And then immediately following that, swiping right through the end of the summer. It's going to be hashtag shot girl summer. Like things are happening. Things are cooking. I'm going to get a mani-pedi. It's like all this dumb shit that I love that like brings me joy that I mean not the swimming right but well I'm you know there
by the way I'm so dumb that I just picked up you meant dating app. I'm like, yeah, let's swipe. I'm like oh, is this like a Patreon thing, like swipe right to join Patreon, like is that and the cut color thing is very important for I always regret not having a choice but straight hair. I have curly wavy hair.
Have wavy hair,
but like you can't go in, like I can't go into a barber and be like, let's try something new. Like there's no, it's like, well, why don't we just keep it wavy? Like there's nothing, like Brad Pitt can go into places and be like, I can grow it mid-length. I can grow it, like he can grow hair at will. And that's when you know you're going to be famous if you can grow hair at will. And there's a couple people that are just so, I think, who's the guy that plays Thor? He's another guy that's like that. He can grow
Hemsworth?
Hemsworth.
One of the Hemsworths.
He can get his hair short, long, and it's got to be so awesome to try different hairstyles. I've had the same hairstyle since I was like a baby, pretty much.
I mean, I have to say I have wavy hair, but that hasn't stopped me. And I mean that in the absolute worst possible way, from trying a ton of different hairstyles. And I've done every color. Like I've done blonde, blonde, platinum. My hair was essentially white for a number of years. Ginger, red, scarlet red. I've done, and it's fun. It's fun to just like experiment and do these things
you're outside and people can see you. You're like the Tom Sandoval of podcasting.
Oh my God, I die. For the way he spends more time on his own regimen than I ever would, but I love him for it. I love the people who put in quality time.
I am a huge Tom Sandoval fan. I can say that like without irony. I love people that are passionate about everything they do. Like I don't have the patience to be passionate about my look like that. I mean, like in my, like it all ended for me in like like elementary school, I remember seeing this River Phoenix movie called Night in the Life of Jimmy Reardon, and he wore like a sports jacket. Like, I remember on the cover, it was like a sports jacket, and like, you know, it was a young kid with a sports jacket. So it was that in the movie The Lost Boys, Corey Haim's fashion in that. Mm. And they were wearing like colorful button-up shirts and like sports jackets. And I remember in the fifth grade making my mom take me to like Ross or whatever cheap store there was to put together an outfit like that. And I remember going into fifth grade going, holy shit, like I've really, this is something. And I look at pictures now and it's like, oh my God, it looks like I half-dressed for Easter. You know, like it was like Ryan got to pick out what he was wearing to Easter Mass today, and it was so bad. Like that's the last. Like I have delusions of grandeur, but like I have extended fantasies. I talk about this all. Like I used to dream about being Teen Wolf. Like the movie. Did you ever see the movie Teen Wolf with Michael J. Fox?
Of course.
They celebrated him when he became a wolf. Like he was. Like the reality of that situation is, if you became a wolf, you would, like, the government would hunt you down, and this high school celebrated him except for the principal. Like, girls were, like, sleeping with him. He's the star of the basketball team. So I would be, like, I would be picked on in, like, elementary school and middle school, and I used to dream if I could only wolf out that people, like, I would be, like, you know that envision of people throwing you up on their shoulders and, like, Ryan, Ryan. Like, that's what being a wolf would do for me. And like that's the kind of fashion I'm into.
You wanted big Rudy energy.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
And
exactly.
I think that's great. Yeah. I think that's great. I also think like whatever makes you feel good, it actually genuinely does not matter what it actually looks like. The importance is how it makes you feel. And I was trying to have this conversation with somebody the other day where I was trying to explain like the idea of dating and like the hair stuff and like blah, blah, blah. It's, to me, connected, but has literally nothing to do with that other person. Like, I'm not doing these things so that someone can look at me and maybe feel a certain. I'm doing these things because they make me feel good and I want to feel great. And we've been through so much shit that it's like, yeah, I want to care about this stuff again. I stopped caring about almost everything except for not dying. And I'm okay to reshift focus once more and care about these little minutia things that people used to judge women for caring about, but are actually great things.
You're taking the power back.
Time and energy. Yeah. And also, like, God forbid we talk about the frivolous things that we love. We now understand how essential some of those activities and moments and conversations can be. So it's like, yeah, like get back some of that power. Get vaccinated. Do, you know, don't like go to a fucking rave tomorrow. But...
Oh, wait. Are you one of those people that are like pro-vax? I'm joking.
Can you believe?
That's my new thing is like to scare people and be like, oh, okay. Are you like a fan of Fauci's? Okay. Well, anyways.
So you're putting on your Monique Samuels cap right now is what you're doing? Your
I'm just saying QAnon makes some points. That's all I'm saying. Tom Hanks, can we really trust him? That's all I'm saying.
So what's the life like in LA right now? What's the, are you doing stuff? Are you seeing people? Are you going to dinners? Are you doing outdoor dining?
I went to Tom Tom twice, and that was actually three times I've been now. I went to a friends and family night, and then I've been two other times, and it was the one, and it's so they built this new front outdoor patio, and I've been vaccinated and all of, you know, so, but it was, I was wondering if there was going to be that moment where you like tear up and you're like, oh my God, I'm back, you know? And it's so funny how you'd kind of get back into the swing of things, but then you'll have moment. Like I remember a couple moments looking around and being like, holy fuck, did we just go through that? Like, we're just like, this is now we're just, life is like this again. Like it is funny. I think the next thing that'll be huge is going to a concert, you know, is that I was a huge concert goer, even by myself. I love live music. I love that energy. Mm-hmm. And when I see Countess Luann for the first time, I know we're going to be all right. I know we'll be all right. No, I was at Joshua Tree a couple weeks ago, and there's a place called Pappy and Harriet's, and outside, it was a Saturday night, and they have this whole outside area, and there was a three-piece band playing, but not like, it was just a bar band. It was just a bar band, and I if you had seen my face, I you would have thought I was watching the Beatles, because I was like, holy, I forgot how, and they weren't even that good. But to me, after not seeing live music for that long, I was just like, this is the best thing I've ever seen in my life. And I was like, it was just so nice to sit with my mask on outside around people, drinking and just listening to covers. I mean, of even covers of the Eagles songs. I was like, yeah, Hotel California. Woo! I'm from California. Yes. You know, those moments, though, they're, it is funny, though, how much we are creatures of, like, where we kind of adjust really rapidly. Where I was back at Tom Tom, even, I was like, okay, yeah, I remember this. I remember this. Like, okay, you know, I don't know. I'm curious what the rest of this year will be. Like, if we'll catch up and it'll be complete panic when we realize what we did actually kind of survive, you know?
Yeah, I think there's different ways of being a creature of habit. I think I'm kind of the person where it's like, it is a genuine adjustment for me, where it has to be incremental steps. And I think that's also from, like, the underlying condition perspective, and also being a New York City resident who, unlike Ramona, didn't flee to Florida to probably infect half the town.
Wait, like, are you one of the girls that were, like, shitting in public that Ramona was talking about? No,
we weren't going to talk about that.
That was my favorite thing. Ramona was like, Ramona Instagrams the mayor, like, there are people pooping out here.
Ramona took a photo or a video of fucking Madison Avenue in the 70s or 80s, where there is literally nothing. The only thing that's, I mean, unfortunately, yeah, a lot of the stores were boarded up. A lot of the stores were closed. But her pretending it was a war zone. I mean, I didn't go outside the first 2 months. I was literally inside in my apartment trying not to absolutely destroy my roommate, who is an angel sent from heaven above. But I was like in a mood for those first 2 months.
Is there any way your roommate would come on my podcast? I'd love to ask some questions of the experience.
At one point, I went up to her, and apologies if you're Ramona listening to this, but I said, like, I'm so sorry I was a cunt. Like, I am so sorry. And she knew that I was. So we both were like, yeah, that happened. Like, you were a real dick while you were on a work call talking about a gala that was getting canceled that I was supposed to produce. Like, I was not great. I also took the precautions to, like, the level of, like, if someone gets a package of something, is this going to kill me? You know, like, there was a scary time, and it was a scary time being a New York City resident, knowing that you're in the global epicenter where there were sirens all day, all night. We had no idea what was going on. All we knew was that sort of the end was near for those of us who couldn't afford to, flee to a home somewhere else, which technically you shouldn't be doing anyway. Like, we were all supposed to, like, stay in place. And the people who listened to that also happened to be the people who couldn't afford to make another decision. So it felt a little bit like we were stuck and then having to deal with the brunt of whatever the wealthier people decided, however they behaved. And yet we got through it. It was tough. Like, watching other people fall in love with Cuomo was a huge joke for the majority of Manhattan residents, because we have hated him
for a while,
for forever. It's not like the de Blasio levels of hate. It's just like a different kind of love. There's a different kind of hatred of Cuomo, which I think some people are, like, catching up to now. But, you know, it was a really difficult time. So I think exactly what you're saying, like, there will come a time for many people when it's like you're diving in, you're going straight into, like, things that bring you joy, that make you happy, you're feeling great. And then all of a sudden you feel what I would quantify as signs of, like, post-traumatic stress.
Not tethered to the earth. Yeah, exactly.
Right. And for New Yorkers, I think for some of us, it's just going to be a little bit more obvious, because a part of my head, like, when I talk to friends who are like, yeah, the percentage is super low, I stop reading stuff because it was so anxiety inducing. So I still, piece of me still lives in the space where it's like, we are still the number one in the world. That's hard to grapple with.
It was insane. The first part when I was watching 24/7 cable news, and I'm not talking even just MSNBC. I was watching Fox News. I was watching anything I could get my hands on, just about everything. and I would watch Bravo and stuff so I could talk about it. But, you know, I missed out that first 8 months when people were doing rewatches of everything. Like, I was like, at the beginning, I was like, you know what? Yeah, I'll use this time effectively. I'll rewatch. I didn't rewatch shit. I just watched cable news. And then this last couple of months, like on the tail end of it, I started to take on new series again, like new shows. Like, I only had so much in my, like, I was so ready for something more drastic to happen. Like, it was the only time where if UFOs came and visited us, it would have done nothing. Like, it would have done nothing. Like, I mean, right outside, I mean, I remember the Black Lives Matter protests right outside. I lived right on Melrose, and right, it was craziness on top of craziness. I mean, craziness, by the way, I believe in the craziness that why that was done for, but it was just wild for one thing to happen after another, where I was so desensitized at a certain point where you could have, like, you know, you could have thrown a brick at most of us, and at a certain point we wouldn't have felt it, you know. And then getting COVID on Christmas, it was just like, holy crap. Like, you know, anyways,
when it comes to the protests, I was like bereft because I couldn't go outside because the vaccine was a bit of a dream at that point. And I live right by Gracie Mansion. Why am I pointing to my dresses?
Yeah, it's like they live
in
the closet.
Window. Right, yeah. There's a window over there in my fancy apartment. And so I live right by Gracie Mansion. So I would hear and see protesters, but I was not comfortable or in a position medically where I could, like, join thousands and thousands of people. But I put up shit on social media that's like, if you're protesting near Gracie Mansion, you need water, you need snacks, you need whatever, I'll leave it outside the door of my apartment. Like, that's all I can contribute when it comes to, like,
I hope you remember that during BravoCon when I need food.
Oh my God, can I tell you selfishly, first off,
you're probably ecstatic that it's in New York.
I am so
I had
happy,
heard it was gonna be LA, so I was pissed.
Well, this is based on no information from the network, but I assumed after BravoCon in 2019 that there would be some sort of expansion to LA, because the two highest areas of, like, Bravo Lebs are New York and Los Angeles. So I assumed pre-COVID that the next one would maybe be in LA. And again, not based on any conversation or information or anything. And then COVID happened. And then I was like, I've had conversations with some of our mutual friends just being like, I see maybe 2022 and it'll be something, yada, yada, yada. So they announced the fall and it's here. And I would be this excited regardless, because I'm the cheapest person in the entire world, and buying a flight, I'm like, in my head, I'm like, in the hotel. So, but I could not be happier that it's happening in New York. Could not.
I mean, it's just shocking because I don't think New York has a Dorit's room at Buca di Beppo. Like, I do not think you guys even have that kind of star power. And that's why I was like, we have Tom Tom. We have, like, that whole circuit. If you go 30 miles away, we got Dorit's room. There's so many landmarks, I feel like, in Los Angeles. And I feel like the only reason I feel like it is, I was okay with it, though, because it was like, let's bring some jazz back to New York. Let's show them what New York is all about again with, like, a revamped BravoCon. So I think I understand it. I think that really is one of the reasons, too, is that, like, things do need to come back to New York. Things, you know, like, there are certain things, like one of my best friends has a very kind of like, well, the businesses that didn't survive, that's very unfortunate, and other things will rise, you know, other culture will rise, and, you know, but sometimes with things like New York and stuff, like, New York has always meant so much since I was a little kid to me and what it represents, that I don't want that to, I want that to thrive. Like, I want things to me. I think there are certain things that I have not accepted yet will ever falter. Like, it's the same, I feel the same way about Bravo, is that I look towards the future. I want this. I want to be talking about this potentially in 5 years from now. That's why I get upset at other streaming services when I feel like 90 Day Fiancé is doing better than Bravo. I'm like, we need to make, like, I want things to mean something. I think that's part of the great joy of life, is when you can actually have meaning and attachment over something. Of course, sometimes it's bad, but with Bravo and stuff, like, it's like such a great group of people that all love this stuff. I've met so many amazing people because of this stuff. I want this to survive. It's in my active interest to do whatever it takes to get, like, don't you worry, like, are we bringing any new people in? I feel like we got all us. We're passionate, man. We will talk about this till the day we die. but are we bringing in any new blood? You know, everybody needs to go out and grab one person and make them watch Family Karma right now, you know?
I mean, that's such a good question. I don't know. I think it's really, my focus has been like within the existing community, what are the shows that people need to watch that they're not watching? Like for
Married to Medicine and
Married to Medicine, yeah. Family Karma, like for the people who
Can't Get Away.
for the people, for the people who, you know, watch only Vanderpump Rules, quasi Rest in Peace, or only Below Deck, like what are the shows that can introduce people where they don't feel the panic of like, how do I start watching a show, a franchise that's already 13 seasons in? Yeah. Like that's a lot of pressure. And so it is hard to introduce people because we are so far along at this point.
I think
it's
I was
tough.
Talking about Real Housewives of New York and yeah, like 13 seasons in, if you're going like, well, you know, in season 6 with Ramona, what you got to understand is what she did here was very different than season 1. And then you bring it up to season 12 right now. And then Leah, of course, entered and Luann, mm-hmm. you know, if you start talking like this, it is very hard to get anybody new involved because it's like, mm-hmm. how do I, it's like Game of Thrones where you're trying to like connect kingdoms and stuff. And you're like, okay, when did the girl with the leg throw her leg? Like, when was that? Where is she? Like, there's so much history with this stuff that I think, I don't know, but I think it might scare off some people sometimes. And they see us kooks, like, talking about it like this, and they're like, oh, these guys are, like, just nerds.
Conversely, maybe it'll inspire people to watch because it's, we get so fucking excited talking about it. I mean, like, okay, so thinking about Bravo 5 years in the future, the Bravo community 5 years in the future, if you had some sort of time capsule that you were assembling to open again in 5 years that is representative of your love of Bravo now or the Bravo community now, what would you put in it?
And that, Wait, that I already own or something that I grab from somebody in the
not
show?
Like literal, not like literally a program. Oh, actually, this would probably represent like a program. It doesn't have to be something you literally currently, I can't say literally enough, but like literally own. It could be something that is symbolic to you or an idea of something. Well, like what would you put in there?
I literally own this. Is that I have a first edition.
Oh no, I need it already.
I have an actual wedding invite from Mr.
Not from Luann and Tom.
No, Mr. Jax Taylor to Miss Brittany Cartwright. I have a wedding invitation that was given to their guest, and it has "Be Our Guest" embossed on it from Beauty and the Beast. And it has like the Kentucky Castle. When you open up the envelope, the Kentucky Castle's embossed on the, and then it's like, and there's like, it is so, and I have this physical, and so it is to me, and I have a shadow box that I've been meaning to put it in because I'm like, how, because I always think like, I want to do a reality show museum. Like, by the way, at this point, if any girl's ever interested in me again, there's no way. Like, once they get to my room, they're like, oh, I'm going to die. Like, this guy's going to kill me. Oh, I'm dead. Like, oh, no, I got to say. I mean, I bid on Luann's wedding dress to Tom at one point over the pandemic, you know. I only could go up to $300, and obviously I didn't get it. But I was like, imagine you go into my room and you see, like, a mannequin figure, and it's like, it's a wedding dress. And you're like, that's Luann's from her wedding with Tom, you know.
Wait, do you remember Adrienne Maloof, season 1 of Beverly Hills, when we got the tour of her fucking mega mansion and she had her goddamn wedding dress framed in the wall?
It was like
of
the,
her.
The bat,
that could be you.
The Batcave, yeah. I totally see that. But and now I realize even, and you probably are like this too, where you get a lot of Bravo merch or like somebody's nice enough to send you something. And you like it's getting to a point where even I'm like, well, you know, I have other interests. It's like, you know, like it's like I have other things I like. It's overpowering. Like I need to eventually have money to get a house or something because it's overpowering. It's becoming overpowering.
I do not feel that way. The more the merrier. I love getting a package. I love getting mail.
Please, all the packages. I'm just saying.
Send
I even realize it's getting
shit.
Weird. I even realize it's getting weird, you know?
I mean, when it comes to the literal collection of it, I don't know at a certain point how you put stuff on display, on display, on display each and every day, every day, every day. Like, I think at a certain point it could become a little tough, but I mean, I love that. I love that you're that dedicated. That you've been to
Town
three times.
This feels like when people like talk to me like with pity. Oh, I love that for you. That's so nice. Oh my God. You're a champion. No, you're a champion. Oh my God. I believe in you.
No, I really.
Keep it up. Keep up the hard work. I really do. It's very attractive. I love that. What do you mean? I love that. It's very, it really, it fits, it suits you. It suits you well. On others, it wouldn't be as much.
You know what I'm saying. You fully know what I'm saying.
I'm the only one that goes into TomTom every time and I'm like, why isn't there more of like a gift shop? Where's the merch? Like, I'm always like, why don't they do those pop action figures of you guys? Like, I always, and then I dumbly try to like bring it back to like guy shit I grew up with, like G.I. Joe. Mm-hmm. I'm like, why aren't there action figures? Why? Who's not going to buy a Tom Sandoval action figure? Like, in my head, I'm like, or like a Jax one, and there's like a Band-Aid for like, you know, like nose job Jax.
What was the experience like going to TomTom for friends and family? What did that? So that was like a pre-opening celebration.
My buddy,
what was that like?
My buddy Logan, not Logan, no, the DJ James Kennedy Logan from a couple seasons ago, but Logan, who actually has worked at TomTom from the beginning. He's really good friends with Ariana and Tom, and
right.
Knows him from St. Louis. But he's also one of my really good friends, even before I knew Ariana and Tom. Anyways, he knows what a freak I am for all this stuff, and I was with him and our other friend. Well, no, he was working. And then our other friend, Janet, who used to be really good friends with Sheena. And so I was with them. And then a girl who was on The Bachelor. Anyways, it was like 5:30 in the afternoon.
Oh, my God.
But it was just cool. So it was like we go in there and we're in the front. And then, you know, Lisa and Ken saunters up, and I literally mean saunter, like slowly saunters. He's just like stumbling with the dog, you know. And it was like they sit out front because they're kind of like mascots in a way.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah.
All of a sudden, I'm just like, holy crap! Like I started ordering their, but I gotta say this, I think Sir is like, you know, anybody that goes to Sir or knows, like, it's like Planet Hollywood, but like even less mm-hmm. than. I think TomTom, I will argue, has some of the best, really good food, really good drinks. And I say that without irony. Like the buffalo cauliflower wings that at TomTom are so good.
Wow.
But yeah, so we got it, and it was nice. I got a little buzz on in the afternoon. It was only like an hour and a half or 2 hours. The only weird thing is whoever was playing music all of a sudden piped, like, they must have been doing it through their phone or something, and all of a sudden porn came on. Like,
shut up.
No, you know what?
Ask
Laura.
No, that did not.
Ask Laura Marie Shainalls and Carrie O'Donnell, who were right next to me. They were like, that was, and I believe they even mentioned this on their, like, but that did happen. And it was just for like 10 seconds. And here's a little tea. By the way, just kill me next time I say tea. Here's a little tea. Hold on to your belt. Yeah. So this was the week all the Vanderpump kids rented. They're in Palm Springs. You know, like they were in Palm Springs. Supposedly, this gets brought up in the show that this porn got piped through the speakers or something. Which I don't even know how that would, because it was only like 10 seconds. So I think that might be some kind of little scene or whatever. I don't know. So
interesting.
And
it wasn't being filmed, right?
No, that's the thing, is that they can't. Until I think June 15th in LA, you can't film. Like, they can't. It has to be like, I think, less than 15 people to be able to film. Mm. So I think right now all they can film is on like Mondays and Tuesdays when they're closed potentially. But I think that will change on June 15th when everything is full bore. But I mean, I was there on a Saturday night, and it was just jam packed. It was like, I mean, it seemed like it was doing great. I mean, by the way, that whole area of West Hollywood, Boys Town, is just such great energy, you know?
Yeah, I haven't been back to LA since like 2018. I did go to See You Next Tuesday. It was remarkable. I spent 40 minutes talking to Paul James's. That was an experience. And I was with a friend of mine who doesn't watch any Bravo, any Housewives, and he and I were both enchanted with Paul because I love a character, and he is such a character that I like could not get enough of Paul. But I want to go back. I'm thinking about maybe like doing some sort of trip for business reasons.
Well, that, at this point, it is kind of cool. You can, like, it kind of turns out, like, the business that you're doing and the business that I'm doing is, like, also really fun. Like, so it's like,
yeah,
this is kind of business, but the majority of it is fun. But speaking of See You Next Tuesday, I remember this was, like, right before the pandemic in February. See You Next Tuesday made its triumphant return after DJ James Kennedy had been, like, banned from Sir. And so this is actually on my, this is one of the first episodes of my podcast. I went with my mic and stuff, and I thought I was going to cover it like Woodstock, because I was like, oh my God, like, I was like, is it, can I even get tickets at this point? They're like, yeah, you just go to the door. I'm like, oh, there's no way. I was like, I got to get, me and my buddy Jay, I was like, we got to get there super early. We got there, like, nobody was there. Like, nobody was there. And then I was like, well, and then I was like, did we get the date wrong? Like, there's no way this isn't going to be packed. Like, I was, in my head, it was like the Grateful Dead. I was like, people are going to be coming from, like, other states and stuff. And I have a whole video of the whole thing. It was like, it was really sparsely attended, and, like, all that happened was that I got really tipsy, and I really enjoyed it, but it's one of those things. And then finally I was even like, I gotta go. So I was like, hey, I just went right up to DJ James Kennedy. I was like, hey, can I take a pic real quick? Cool. Bye, man. He doesn't know me from Adam. So, you know, but you got to do those on those big moments.
It is also just the strangest setup, because he's essentially playing his computer on a hostess stand.
Yeah. Yeah. It's, well, it's so a very weird. Tiny. Well, people don't realize
he's at, like, the entrance. They don't, it's have not even a space.
They don't have a dance floor. Like, they don't realize. Right. And then, like, so there was one time I went to Sir, and, like, they have that front little space where DJ James Kennedy DJs, and then they have this little, I'm talking little patio area right off the, there, where it's like 10 seats maybe, and all the Vanderpump kids were there, and I got waved over to, like, and by the way. So I got waved over to be in there, and, like, Tom was making me a drink. And it was so scary and claustrophobic. But what was the weirdest part was the Vanderbilt kids were all drinking, and, like, this was normal. And then you turn around, and it's, like, 100 people just with their cameras out, just, like, watching, like, just, like, with bated breath while loud music plays. So I would do, like, I was literally, like, blocking people's shots, and I felt so awkward and weird, and they were just so used to it. Like, it was just wild. It was like they were being watched like they were in a zoo.
I mean, that's similar to that. There was a Vanderpump Rules essentially night at BravoCon where it was supposed to be, like, a party.
Oh, the premiere, yeah.
There was that too, but then there was also this event at night where they were in, like, the largest room at one of the BravoCon venues, and James would DJ for a little bit, and it was supposed to be, like, a club, except nobody was really dancing. Everybody was crowded around this little pen where the cast was assembled just getting photos. It was literally, like, 2 or 3 hours of people hoping against hope to get a fucking selfie. I mean, it's like, tough to party with them when you know that there's a Bravo crowd, because that's understandably so, by the way, what people are most invested in, you know.
But, like, Schwartz and Sandoval, I gotta say, what I do, like, I mean, I think they're really nice, and I do give them credit, though. They, if anybody asks ever for a picture, I've never seen them say, like, and they also, like, they do it with a smile on their face. Like, it's not even, you know, that sense sometimes, and especially I've worked with a lot of, like, Hollywood people over the years out here, and, like, bigger name actors, and they can kind of get to a point where it is, they're just assholes. They're assholes. Mm-hmm. And I think there is, with a core group of the cast, they know how lucky they are potentially and how one in a million shot it is for any of this stuff to happen. Like, essentially, I mean, this isn't the cast of Friends by any stretch of the imagination, but it like, they all came to be actors. This is valid work. It has given them careers. Like, I worked at an acting studio where all of those Vanderpump kids had come in at a certain point, and they're all amazing looking, but they didn't have great acting levels. They weren't like, well, this kid's going places, you know, like, they were extremely good looking people that have great personalities for the most part, but, you know, they weren't, you know, it wasn't going to be like Angels in America all of a sudden, like, you know, Tom Schwartz plays Pryor, you know.
Well, I think, you know, it works. That's why reality TV works. I think with many performers because it is an elevated performance. The problem is that when the performance takes over from the person, that's usually when there's a shift in either that person's future on reality TV or our understanding of who they are. It's like, are we going to unpack the performance? Or are we going to talk about the person who probably, hopefully, likely lurks underneath?
That's why it always cracks me up seeing the interviews now with Jack, with Jack's, where he'll be like, they were trying to make my character gay at one point, or, you know, they tried to make, well, you know, like he would say, like, he was like he acted like he was like deep in like Daniel Day-Lewis territory. He's like, I just didn't like the direction my character was going. And that's just not me. I had outgrown who they wanted me to be as a character. And I'm like, I think that is some of the most pretentious BS ever. When you start comparing a reality show to a TV show or a movie, or talk about yourself in the third person like you're a character, and you know, it's just to me that rings so false and so cringe, you know.
Yeah, and he was bringing that onto the show. He was talking about how he was the star to Lisa Vanderpump. Like, that's a good sign that you don't have a great future here when it's edited in the, I mean, not to say that it was the editing, but when it's shown in a way where you are so obviously the joke in this.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like, you can say that I'm the star of the show. You can have those kinds of conversations. But when we all know that that is a farce, you're in trouble. You know,
I think the first year after a Housewife or a Bravolab or any, you know, that they cease to work, I always find that, like, I would love to know more about that first year and what kind of, like, and I'm not joking, what kind of panic that might set in, or that grasping at straws. I mean, we see Jax tease like a big announcement every day, or, you know, a couple weeks ago he posted like, this is my third film as a producer in this last year. And it's like, okay, man, like I love people that can unabashedly lie, and the good majority of people will believe lies because they're just good people. But also, you know, producing films isn't as easy as, you know, it's not just picking up a piece of paper and like, I produced this.
Well, and apologies to Lala, but I think it was New York Magazine did a big feature on Rand recently, and the whole discussion of the fact that it's like a shit factory running, where it's just a ton of bad movies that they pump out because they're able to sell them abroad, and they pay a shit ton of money to like C or D or possibly melted over B-list actors to do three lines, and then you market it as they are the star of this thing that they did for 20 minutes one day for $1 million check or whatever. So he may have done something related to production on these shows, but the question is, like, was this anything approaching any kind of quality that will be seen at any point, even video on demand here?
Well,
like, it's not.
No.
I mean,
that article that was called King of the Geezer Teasers, which was a great title for that article. But you're right. Like, he has this plan that he put in place where he'll pay somebody like Bruce Willis his asking
Rant.
Fee of $5 million. And then you get to use him on the poster. He only has two scenes in it. Only he'll be shot out within 3 days, usually.
Mm-hmm.
And if you go over budget, he will refuse to do an extra day, Bruce Willis. But the thing is, also, Bruce Willis is like, well, why would he do that? He has like some kind of quote unquote legacy. It's because he knows nobody will see this. This is goes
exactly.
to foreign markets. You know, his and my and this I feel like this is my motto as well. It's quantity, not quality. He is it's overpowering you with shit. So eventually it just then becomes like, well, he has all this to show for it. Of course, I've only heard of two of these films. I mean, Rand was a producer on The Irishman, but remember, he was not actually able to be noticed by the Producers Guild of America. He was not able to accept an award. The PGA only allows three producers, and I think The Irishman had like eight or nine. And Rand was a producer in financial interest only. He was
not
able
artistic.
No, there was nothing like on set. You know, Rand was able to take pictures with Martin Scorsese and all of that stuff. But the funniest thing is, you got to watch the new Rand feature. It used to be called Axis Sally, AXIS, and it's with Al Pacino and this girl. It was like 1940s film that's based on a true story. There's a preview on it, and I had like smoked a little something of something, and I watched this trailer, and I was like, wow, this is like, it's like real trailer music. And I was like, there's Al Pacino. Wow. Like, and he's like, you don't even know. And I'm like, wow, he's really doing his thing. And then you realize, oh my God, I think this could be one of the worst films. You realize, and then you're like, the head girl, I had to research it. She's I think an ex-wife of a Russian oligarch that he passed away, and she has like hundreds of millions of dollars. And I think she financed this film and then like said, oh, I want to act with Al Pacino. And Al Pacino was like, you'll meet my quote. And you can tell it's not really, you can tell. When you could tell there's like, you know, like obviously there's a director that knows how to do, you know, put movies together, but it wasn't anybody that was able to direct Al Pacino's performance. So like it's a lot of like screaming and stuff.
Oh my
God. Because I was like, wait a sec. I don't remember the 1940s at all because I wasn't alive yet, but I don't remember a lot of the females having huge fake boobs. I don't know.
God.
And so, but to me, I think Randall sees like, oh my God, pocketbook. And like then I deep dove that girl, and for like a large period of time, you would see Rand and Lala with this girl and her new boyfriend, and her new boyfriend is like a Hungarian or Slav, and this guy's in the movie too. So she put her boyfriend in the movie, and I'm just like, it's not called Axis Sally anymore. It's called something like Wings of Sally. Watch the trailer, because everybody watch the trailer. I really want to get other people's opinions on it, but it's so bizarre how that all works, you know?
That is actually crazy. I mean, it's nuts.
He's a hustler.
It's actually nuts.
He's a hustler. Like, the fact that Rand even is allowing himself to be on Vanderpump Rules this season, I think tells you everything that you need to know. Like, guess who's not on Vanderpump Rules? Martin Scorsese. He does not have to be on Vanderpump Rules. I think at a certain point, you know, Rand is like, fuck, I do need to do this now. Like, I actually need to be on this show. This helps.
And
his brand.
Money isn't good. Like, he's the unions are like, do not participate in any kind of, because he doesn't pay people. He's like truly fucking with everybody.
But he is. I met him once at my acting studio, and he came and talked to all the students.
Wait, Rand did?
Rand did. And well, this Rand and Lala, and I was the only one that I knew exactly, because I knew who Rand was at the time. It was before he was on the show, I believe, but Irishman was about to come out or something. Anyways, he sat everybody down in a room, and I got to tell you, like, he is a charming dude. You can get why he's a fast talker. He won the entire room out. He goes, hey, pass around this pad of paper. I want everybody's name and number. I am giving this information to my casting director, and you will all be called in for an audition for something.
Wow.
None of us ever got called for an audition. But
it was the thought
of like, wow, this cool guy. And then Lala was just sitting to the side up there on the little platform with him. And she would like hop in. She'd be like, remember that time at Sundance? And, you know, and like, I don't think anybody knew who Lala was, even though to me, Lala was the biggest star up there. but you kind of got the sense of the dynamic of that relationship, and that Rand, you know, I hate to say BDE, but I think has a little bit of big dick energy, you know?
It's just so interesting when you like remember that he was the IRL inspiration for Turtle on Entourage.
Not
like
necessarily.
He was...
He's one of two guys that was. I looked into that
one
more.
Of
one of two,
two
guys. But he really, he loves that. He brought it. He brings it up. I think he is very, and you know, Hollywood is all about myth making. It's about creating a legend and stuff. So it sounds a lot better if he's the only guy that was the, you know, like I was part of that entourage. That's how it was, you know. But I do think that guy is a scrappy dude that makes things happen. I just wonder, it's the same as like being off reality shows for like a year, like Jax or something. I just wonder what his psyche is like. He owes money to potentially so many people. What that is like every day for him to wake up, have to provide Lala with a baller lifestyle, has two kids from one marriage and one kid from that. Like, I just wonder if he must love that fear. He must love waking up and just trying to make things work. And we've all seen, I think this year especially, that I start to wonder if wealth actually even exists, or if it's all just, you know, like Erica Jane and Tom Girardi or Jen Shah, or you know what I'm saying? Like, I do wonder, I'm like, is there any actual wealth, or is people just waking up every morning and lying and spending and lying and spending until they one day get caught, and hopefully that never happens?
I mean, Beverly Hills started off with like seemingly real people with real wealth. We don't really know what the deal is with Lisa Vanderpump's money, but certainly Adrienne Maloof had seemingly truckloads of it. And now we're living in a hyper imagined world of Beverly Hills with the glam, with the everything else that wasn't emblematic of those first early seasons. And yet we're finding out that so much of this is a mirage. The Erica Jane, the Dorit stuff still has not been truly unpacked or brought to light or even honestly discussed. There are real questions.
I mean, I'm a thousandaire. Like I am, and I used to be ashamed.
Okay, braggy.
Yeah, but I mean, not now. The stock market took a dive, but you know, like there has never been a time, I think, other than this year where I've been comforted in my poorness, where I've been like, well, at least I know I'm not going to jail for that. At least, you know, like I know that I have not lied, cheated and stole from anybody. I know that at least. And I think a lot can't be said for a lot of Bravo's cast these days is that I think we see this like, you know, it's just so funny, too, is because a lot of these ladies, potentially Erica Jane and Jen Shah, might have been even inspired by the original iterations of Housewives. That might have led them to even wanting this glamour and glitz and to add their special sauce to it. Like, that is so dark to think about, is that they are second generation Housewives to me. They are the they are inspired by that initial first season wealth of people like Maloof, and they tried to put their own spin on it, and it all came falling apart, you know?
I mean, that being said, and I would, and then there are people like Leah and Ebony, who I would put in like the third generation, third wave Housewives. But when it comes to Beverly Hills, I was watching this week's episode again before we hopped on.
I've watched it three times. Yes, I love it.
I've only watched it twice, but I will watch it six more times. I thought it was one of the strongest episodes of any franchise in recent history. It's unbelievable. But there's something that I just need to be really open and honest about. And guys, I know this is a safe space and there will be no judgment. I really deeply enjoyed Erica Jane. I really...
In what sense?
I thought her moments, her quips, her side eye, her deep, quick honesty when it came to the Sutton and the Southern of it all. I was when she walked over in that beautiful outfit, the black leather with the black sweater, all of it with the ice cold, ice queen, blonde, platinum hair. But her moments at dinner, the martini, well, doubling down or whatever it's called, I died for it.
Just to be devil's advocate, I disagree with you completely. Like I think... And I know what you're talking about, but to me, it felt like a bad production of high school theater where she's like, I'm a brassy broad and I eat. Let's eat here. I eat and I drink. And the fact that Dorit ruined Kathy Hilton's brilliant prank by letting all those other girls in on it, I was horrified that Dorit ruined this gift from Kathy Hilton of let's prank these ladies. And then Dorit was like, I'll text everybody. Like, that ruined this beautiful moment where it could have actually...
What?
We could have had Erica Jane trug a real martini instead of like, I'm in on it. And I gotta, like, this is how deeply I think about this. I think you know this as well, is that the editors in the production, I think do not like Erica Jane at all, because they are so deeply trolling her, even leaving that stuff in there about Erica Jane in the car going, somebody told me this is where the most fugitives hide in Tahoe. And they're like, who told you that? She's like, I don't know. We know that she filed for divorce 6 days after this trip. So she knows in these scenes that this is an alibi potentially. I'm telling you, watch her closely. She wants you to feel the way you feel. She wants that. I'm telling you, there is something deeper at work. She is actually a little bit more subdued than we've seen Erica Jane. And I think she's really trying to let other people do their business.
Okay, couple things. One, I think she's subdued, yes, but I don't think that has anything to do with an alibi. I don't think she would be referencing Tom at all had she known that the divorce would be taking place in a couple days from now. I think that was a very last minute kind of situation where they had reached a crisis point and he didn't know what to do with like his money and stuff or whatever, or protecting her assets, which could maybe include some of his. whatever that is, if that had been in discussion, I don't know that I 100% am on board there. When it came to Dorit, I think Dorit was trying to yes and. Dorit was trying to like add on to this thing in a way that I thought was really sweet.
No,
Sutton
just fool
ruined
me,
it.
Fool, no.
Not Dorit.
Okay. Sutton, by the way, is one of the best silent film stars this show has seen in years. She's like a cross between that and the No More Wire Hangers Mommy Dearest. Like, she looks exactly... And so the fact that... So all Dorit needed to do was convince the other girls to drink. Like, let's do this. She then let everybody in on the joke. So then Rena was like, we're now pranking Kathy. No, we were pranking you. This is the whole point of that. Kathy... in her weird brilliance, I thought, set up this amazing prank. And then Dorit, being a stool pigeon, you know, somebody that, like, tells on people, she let everybody else know because Kathy didn't realize those other girls knew then, and it was Kathy's original prank.
Dorit's the only reason that those other people participated it to begin with. They just sat there in shock that Kathy was doing this, what is it called, doubling down? What is it, drinking in one... whatever the fuck it's called.
Yeah,
alcoholism. They were so in shock because they thought that Kathy and Dorit were truly bottomsing up.
Wouldn't you have killed to actually see them do this? Like, I would have loved.
Yes,
seen Dorit,
but the whole point was that it was, as Crystal said, Kathy loves to do a prank. It wouldn't have happened except that it was quite obviously a prank. I would love to see these women get sloshed, but the only reason that it was a continuation of what would have been an existing joke with just Kathy and Dorit was because of Dorit, and I think that is in the best possible way. The women would have just sat there and continued to look shocked. They added on to a joke in order to, like, have a little fun. I thought that was great. That was what I loved about it.
But if you were Sutton, though, I'm highly sensitive and paranoid potentially about
same.
Like, you would have seen all of those people texting under the table, and you would have thought exactly what Sutton was saying is that you were the butt of some joke. I don't agree with a lot of what Sutton's been doing, but I will say in that moment, I have been in that moment. I think you would feel really like, oh, I get it. I'm the joke again. I'm the joke.
And when people told you this truly isn't what you think, I think you would take a step back and understand that, regardless of whether or not you were still upset.
At that point, sure, but she's a housewife. We've seen how she acts over, like, you know, she has, I mean, even Kyle grabbed her and was like, you need to act like a lady.
I mean, I think Kyle was doing her a favor. Oh, Kyle was like, shut the fuck up. And like, listen, because you can be sensitive, but where Sutton goes wrong is her inability or disinterest, which is probably more important to her and more at the core of her being, in listening to other people. So literally anything could have happened. It could have been two people, and she still would have been thinking, they are talking about me, just like she thought when she was showing up to an event last season, and she was absolutely confident that there was going to be the hairdresser, that Joey Maloof, that she didn't get along with, and it was going to be a prank against her, regardless of literally anything happening, because somebody said something and she misinterpreted it. She is deeply insecure, which is very different from sensitive. And regardless of whether or not you're insecure, that's not other people's responsibility to make you feel better. And if people are texting under the table, you are being filmed for a reality TV show. Obviously, there's a joke going on. When Crystal understands that you're starting to get upset about it, she does attempt to try to explain it to you. And regardless, on and on about this stuff is wildly dumb.
I don't believe Sutton knows she's on a reality show. I don't think she realizes that's what the cameras are for. No. I mean, like, you know what I'm saying? Like, Sutton, there's a few wires crossed with Sutton that we obviously have all seen now. And, you know, she is flaming out on this show, and I'm kind of scared to see the next couple of episodes. Kind of scared in a fascinated way. But it's like, I love, you know, you have this, like, Sutton, we were all kind of championing Sutton, however you say that word, last season, and like, oh, we're so glad, oh my God. And it is funny, not how fickle, but how quick we turn on these people. It's like WWE, and it's like, we turn on them so quickly. And then there's something like, I think that's why Kathy Hilton is so amazing to us right now, just in the three episodes we've seen, because she's just like this kind of like little spice of like, oh, that's so dumb. That's crazy that she says that. That's so funny, you know, but wait till she gets, I'm fascinated to see Kathy get a real scene of like substance. I want to see what we think of her then, you know?
Yeah, I think with Sutton is revealing herself, and we didn't know Sutton before. We had literally no example of who she was as a person, and so we're getting, I don't know that it's the audience being fickle. I think it's the audience understanding the nuances that are evident in many human people. And what a lot of us liked about her last year was that she was a little bit of a mess, and she's showing that, and she's also showing some of the complications that are inherent in her personality right now. With Kathy Hilton, we think of Kathy Hilton through like the Vogue, the glamour, the old money, the whatever else. And the reveal with Kathy is that she's
a kook,
much more of a normal, kooky human person than anybody would have thought, which is why it's like the reverse of the Sutton experience, taking out Sutton's enormous blind spots. It's the idea that this person that we thought we knew because we had a perception of her from magazines and her children's social media that is now much more filled in.
Are you telling me you don't want the South to rise again, Sarah? That's, I mean, Sutton's whole point is, guys, we have to be more sympathetic to the South. Like, come on, that is wild. That is a crazy, and she did an apology to Crystal that I thought was like, okay, good, you did your Instagram apology, but it's one of those things where it's like, then we saw this week's episode, and it, like, is an extension. Then it all of a sudden starts becoming like a track record, you know?
Sutton genuinely doesn't understand what the problem is. She doubled down in her confessional. She was offended at Crystal because she felt like Crystal was making fun of her saying that she doesn't see race, which is accurate. Yeah, what Sutton doesn't understand is that that is a problem to say these things. So Sutton focuses on Crystal saying that girl, because she's saying to Crystal, you made fun of me, that was rude, you need to apologize. Yeah. What she's not getting is everybody else, the viewers, the large portion of her cast, as people sort of understand the reasons that sentences like that are very problematic, are all thinking like, you're so focused because of your insecurity and your absolute inability to listen to other people. You are so focused on, God forbid, being called a racist that you're not listening to women of color discussing racism. You have no interest in hearing these women because you're so concerned about being called this word. Meanwhile, you're exhibiting behavior that is incredibly insensitive and problematic. And yeah, all she's thinking is, you made fun of me because you called me that girl. And it's like, babe, take a moment. If a woman of color is speaking to you in a way that you feel is hurtful, wonder why that is, because their anger may be well placed. And when Crystal's response, saying something as a smartass sarcastic, that's a defense mechanism. That's somebody saying to you, race, color doesn't matter. Of course you're going to say something back like that. Of course you are, because it's absolutely asinine and ridiculous. And Sutton doesn't care. She only feels like, I need to be treated the ways that I think I deserve to be treated at all times. And we cannot talk about these things because I'm going to get uncomfortable. And the absolute worst thing that you could ever do to me is make me feel uncomfortable. And there we are.
But that's exactly right. But that's why I think these scenes are so important to show.
Totally.
But also, it's the same thing with New York and that last scene with Ebony, Luann, and Ramona, is that, this could all be solved with just active listening, of just listening. Like, there's no listening happening at these tables. And that's what's so funny, is that the answer is right there, but we put our own egos in the way. Our own egos, like Luann, by the way, like Luann, if you ever want to see Luann turn red, is that she was also equating education with class, and Luann's whole brand is class. So she thinks in her head, she's no longer able to listen. She's no longer able to take on any other's viewpoints, even though this is somebody talking from experience that, like, you don't call a African-American woman an angry woman. That is something deep inbred where it's very offensive and hurtful and triggering. Luann can't even hear that because all she hears is somebody saying, you called me not classy. You know, you said I'm not classy.
I think it started as a conversation about class, but Luann interpreted education as intelligence, and then it went completely off the mark. Luann started by sort of having a conversation around class, and then she raised the idea of her Catholic school upbringing, and then because, again, of Luann's behavior, it went completely left. But I think with Luann and Sutton, it's like there are both these, you know, intense moments that happen on these franchises. At least on Beverly Hills, Kyle was open to listening when Garcelle was speaking. Luann is just doubling down and revealing herself, where I don't actually know that the problem is Luann not listening. I think the problem is Luann doesn't care to listen, and Luann is just continuing to exhibit incredibly problematic behavior as a weapon against Ebony because of her own insecurity. Well, or I don't even think it's insecurity. I think it's Luann's interest in aggression. I felt like Luann was very aggressive. Ramona was relatively aggressive in ways that made me so uncomfortable, where it wasn't really a listening issue, which, you know, I get is a part of it. I think a lot of this is just genuinely Luann's character.
Well, do you know who I am? There is a, do you know who I am? Like, yeah. I am the Countess. You know, I've been here from the beginning. Like, there is that kind of, like, cock of the walk kind of thing where you're like, what are you doing? Like, so I'm just saying that kind of attitude. Like, I think we all saw where that scene was going the minute it started. Like, I knew I could have predicted exactly how that was going to end. And what was so funny was that you had Leah genuinely coming in angry back and
screaming,
forth.
Screaming,
you're
going to
suck
sluts,
D
whatever.
And, like, your
right,
daughter's
right.
sucking this and blah, blah, blah. Actually an angry person, and Ebony's getting branded as the angry one. And I just love that they all just are like, well, that's Leah, you know, that's crazy Leah, you know. It's so bizarre to me that was like right in front of their faces. And Ramona even brushed it off, you know. She's saying, like, Ramona, your daughter did this since she was 14 years old. And Ramona's like, no, that's crazy, no.
Well, I think the thing with Ramona at one point, I think, literally said, like, Leah deserves some grace. Her grandmother is dying. Ebony's grandmother is also dying. Like, it is so wild. And I don't think Luann has any interest. I think Luann is probably confused as to the comments that she's getting on her social right now and has no interest in understanding or unpacking them.
I actually went to Luann's Instagram today because I was like, oh, I bet she's posted something about that.
No, nothing.
She literally posted looking forward to the weekend, and it was a shot of her looking forward, and I was like, oh my god, what?
Yeah, like with the Sutton stuff, I do think it is a listening issue, and I do think that there are some core, I think it's, there are some core tools that need to be explained to Sutton by other white people. It is not the responsibility of women of color and black women to explain to her things. It is a responsibility of some of the cast members, and I do think that will happen on the reunion. I think Sutton's getting a little bit of a quick education right now, and I think Rinna will try to explain. I think Erica Jane will explain. I think Kyle is still sort of figuring some stuff out, but she's definitely open to it. You look at the difference between that and New York, where, like, there is no Ramona. It's, we know who Ramona is. She's revealed herself to us so many times that it actually, not to take away from, like, the danger of Ramona, but, like, it to me, it's like, okay, put that aside. Luann has no interest in hearing, listening to whatever. It, the ways that she was saying things, the nasty look in her eyes, it was really, honestly, gross. And it wasn't to me a conversation of like, oh, and now I'm going to understand these things, because what, I don't even know where to begin with her. It's like the core, it's not only is the language inappropriate, but the behavior is so wildly problematic behind the language that it would require intense discussion and education, which Luann is in no way interested in doing. Absolutely not. I do not think even a little bit. I think it's not even a privilege is blinding thing. I think this is genuinely who Luann is at this point, and maybe has always been.
But that's why it also is such a, it's so fascinating that Sonya is always such a wild card, because you have Sonya there who seems like she's hearing every single word coming out of Ebony's mouth and understanding it. Like, Sonia is such a wild card to me. She is such a mystery where she seems like she nails it sometimes. And then she has like, and of course, alcohol exacerbates her mood. But it is so interesting to watch Sonia. Like, Sonia is not a dummy. Like, she is not a dummy. She gets it. And I think of course, the multicolored fish in the first episode was a little bizarre with Sonia. But it is, I don't know. Like, to me, that was actually kind of reassuring to me to watch her kind of just sit there and like you could tell by her face that she heard everything that was happening. She knew exactly what Lou was saying, disagreed with it. Like I'm so excited to see future episodes of how this plays out. I know people are like, well, Roni's off, Roni's this, that, you know, it's like, well, Roni just is not like cohesively all together, but I am interested in seeing where this goes.
100%. I completely agree. And I just want to reference one thing, which, you know, Reality Guy, you know, the Instagram.
Yes, yeah, yeah. Okay. Uh-huh.
Love him. So he posted a link to an article that was in Oprah Daily. Oh, yeah. That's I think Oprah Magazine is now Oprah Daily, which is the title of the article, Being Colorblind Doesn't Make You Not Racist. In fact, it can mean the opposite. And there's a writer named Samantha Vincenti who wrote a piece about the problematic idea of color, of saying that you are colorblind. And I highlighted one part where she talked about the idea of a colorblind society, while well-intentioned, leaves people without the language to discuss race and examine their own bias. Colorblindness relies on the concept that race-based differences don't matter and ignores the reality of systemic racism. And then in a conversation with Megan Burke, the author of Colorblind Racism, Megan says, I'm not the first one to say this, but for many white folks, being labeled racist is among their worst fears. And as we're continuing to learn in this country, for many people of color, Black folks in particular, their greatest fear is not surviving an interaction with a police officer. So we're really talking about very different worlds of experience, where Sutton, for example, is talking about being labeled a racist as her greatest fear and Southerner, blah, blah, blah. And it is, I think, in the most respectful way, disingenuous for her to consistently raise the idea of her Southern heritage or whatever being as much an important thing that folks shouldn't make stereotypes about as an Asian woman talking about her experience as a woman of color. Like, it's such uneven, it should not even be a part of the conversation. And I think that is something that can be explained to Sutton. I do not think she understands it. I think she needs to be like metaphorically strapped down to a chair and have the spoon fed to her with no choice but to keep her ears open. Otherwise, it's not going to be listened to. With Luann was like actively trying to provoke Ebony.
Yeah, you need to leave.
So you do need to leave,
you know.
Yeah, her calling her an angry pause woman with like a very leering, sneering
look.
I don't know if that's the word. It's I just can't stop saying the word nasty. There was so much nastiness there, and Luann seemed to relish in it. And that is what probably made me most uncomfortable, was this isn't, you're trying to gaslight a woman who started practicing law at 23, began college at 16, is more educated than you, obviously, and is trying to defend that education that she worked her ass off to enable her to discuss and be proud of. And you're mocking it and making fun of it. And I don't think Luann cares to understand why. And even there's a moment where Luann's like, when Ebony says something about like white privilege or something along those lines, and Luann responds and is like, don't bring up her race, just like I wouldn't bring up yours, which felt like a challenge to me more than anything else. It was just honestly a really ugly look for Lou. I didn't like it, obviously.
I have an idea. Wait, are you saying didn't like it? Wait, I kind of was.
You know what?
Are you on the fence?
Like,
are you on the fence?
It was a lot of fun. I was like, it was a lot of fun.
Let me pitch
you
a show. You should do the show called Spoon Fed with Sarah Galley, where you do. you do strap down people like Luann and Sutton and Spoo and really you don't let them up until they get it, you know?
Some critics would argue that that is the motto of yeah, Andy's Girls. Depending on who you talk to, I think the people's oh, wait, couch wait, with
the,
some spoons.
The thing that upset me the most about that conversation was that it overshadowed Garth's lamb curry. He had made
which
this beautiful lamb curry. All we heard about was lamb curry for two episodes.
They get
5 bites into this lamb curry, and then all of a sudden. Like, and by the way, like, and I know how much Sonya hates to miss a meal. Like, she must have been livid.
A free meal.
Well, yeah, like, that's what, like, she brings Tupperware now to places.
I love that
we go from the nude painting to lamb curry to that. But I think that actually is kind of the perfect way of how 2020 and 2021 potentially is. It's all over the place, you know?
It is. Speaking of all over the place, what are your thoughts on Leah these days? You were madly in love with her
and wanted her
to be yours. What's the status? What's happening?
So many people, like, that is so funny. People, like, are weirdly invested in their, like, I get DMs like, oh, how do you like her now? Like, I mean, like people that I don't know, like, oh, are you regretting liking her? You guys, I liked her on a show. Like, I wasn't like, that's the one for me. For like, it was a joke I did on a podcast. I genuinely liked her the first season. I did, but I'm also not an idiot. I have 2 eyes, 2 ears. I can see, like, I think Leah is going through some stuff. I want to give the most, I'm going to use the most popular Bravo word right now is I'd like to give Leah grace. Mm-hmm. I'd like to give her grace and see, I know how I was when my grandmother passed away. But she has come off like a brat at certain times this season. It's really highlighting the discrepancy, not only in age, but in, there are just things that Leah says, I think, that are done for effect and to get a reaction. But at the same time, I do believe that Leah, there is a core there that I really like, but it is funny. I get so many DMs, especially after Roni airs, with like, how's that bitch now? You know? And I'm just like, oh my God. Like, it is so, and it's like, I like, you know, it's like Housewives. Like, I don't ever say a favorite housewife because that, favorite housewives change from season to season. Like, there have been times when I didn't like to read. There's been times I love to read. Same thing with Rinna. Same thing with, like, I will change my mind multiple times, which is fine. That's why I think these shows actually really work. But the Leah thing, I don't think she's, we're 4 episodes in or 5 episodes. She's not having a great season. She's not.
Well, I do have to say, that's why I typically don't ask people who their favorite housewife is. I ask who their spiritual housewife is, which you can interpret in your own way. But I sometimes think of, like, who is the person that you feel like evidences behavior that's most connected to your own, or someone whose behavior you most want to avoid. Like, when you think of, like, your spiritual housewife, who does that mean to you? The favorite thing, as you said, goes back and forth. But with the Leah thing, I think it's okay that you said that, and it was like a sweet thing that you had. And feel free to tell me to go fuck myself, but like, I think that you like had a Bravo Leb crush, which a lot of people have, and there's nothing wrong with that. I don't think you were proposing marriage to her so much as like slide into my DMs, you know?
No, by the way, not in fact, it is very, and like, I crack up because like Leah does not follow me. I've been tagged in literally every one of her photos multiple times by people. Like, that's what I'm saying. Like, I mean, obviously she either doesn't know who I am or she's vaguely creeped out by me. Both are accurate feelings to have about me, but so many people have tagged me in her, like, she flipping posted.
You mean in comments?
Like, yeah, in comments. Yeah, or she'll be like, she posted like a sex toy thing the other day. Had so many people that tagged me. By the way, if she's eventually gonna know that name, that @so, why is he being like, why is 10 people tagging him in my sex toy thing? You know, it's bizarre. Like, I'm not asking anybody to tag me in her photos, but it is funny, and that kind of embarrasses me, so I kind of shy away from like ever trying, I've never really tried to strike up a conversation with Leah.
Why don't you have her on your show?
I don't think she would do it, first off. And I know, I mean, eventually I will. But this time, I don't, like, I had Heather Gay on and I knew exactly what I wanted to say. I really love Heather Gay. Spiritually, I'm very close to Heather Gay. Mm-hmm, I really respect what she went through with her divorce. I mean, I relate. Mm-hmm. I hardly relate to her, like really mm-hmm. relate to her in certain capacities. With Leah, I don't know. I'm still trying to even figure out how I feel. And the other thing, I want to know more about the conversion to Judaism that was sprung mm-hmm. on us that first episode. And I want to know more of the why. I think it's a fascinating, mm-hmm. like, I don't feel like we know
and the
that
how.
Why. Well, that's the thing is that I want to know more about that stuff. Like, mm-hmm. because I feel like I would have loved a spiritual awakening over coronavirus. I want to know I want to know more about that. It might not be super sexy, but if you're going to say that, that was thrown out there on the first episode, and then we didn't really get much more of that. And it's a huge, mm-hmm. that's huge.
Yeah. I mean, like, it would be great to see, and maybe we will see it. Like,
I really hope so.
Shabbat dinner or something.
I really hope so.
That would be incredible. And it's possible. It could still happen. There's unfortunately many episodes left to go. When it comes to your conversation with Heather Gay, what was the narrative around your thinking in the moments before she came on the pod? Like, what was the framework that you were thinking? It was specific to her divorce journey. And
well, I mean, before
reality TV,
I had wanted to talk to Heather Gay, you know, even during the first season. I just think she was one of those unique people that started off at a unique position, because if you watch the first episode, she's panicking about Lisa mm-hmm. Barlow not giving her attention and calling her a good time girl. And I was like, mm-hmm. oh no, this girl is in for a ride. She is going to get stomped like a narc at a biker rally. It's going to get like bad for her. And then after that, each episode, she said something or did something that like really impressed me, whether it be same. Her calling herself like, oh, I'm like a flapper with cankles. And she told me in the interview, she's like, I didn't know they like were going to use audio of that. Like, I thought I was off. Mm-hmm. I thought I was like, I was in a car. Like, I was being picked up by, I was making sure Jen got away. Like, so there are all of these things that I found fascinating. And especially when she talked about divorce and the loss of religion in that community, that struck such a chord for me. Just in terms of my divorce, of you go into this thing never thinking that it will end. And then when you do, I think there's this loss of self and a loss of your own personal trust in yourself of like, well, I can't be trusted. I said this was going to happen and it has not happened. And I think there is this kind of, because we all saw that, or a lot of people saw that and was like, Heather, it's great. Everybody loves you and all that stuff. But I saw that and I go, I know exactly what she's talking about. I know exactly what she means.
What do you mean by I can't be trusted? I'm confused by that.
Well, I mean, if you stand up in front of all of your friends and you say, I am going to love this person until the day and we're going to spend the afterlife or all of that. And then it doesn't happen. And by the way, I'm not even saying there is blame on me or my ex or anything like that. But there is this, I meant it when I said it and then it didn't happen. So what happens with that? What happens with that truth that you told at the time? What happens to that? And you did it in front of your family, your friends, God, if you believe in that. And you know, so that to me, we talked about that haunting, like that is a haunting feeling that even when you get past it by years, sometimes you'll wake up in the middle of the night and be like, oh fuck, you know, like you'll remember. It's like that thing that's always there. So you get haunted by it at times. And I'm not saying you can't get past it. I'm not saying that my life is horrible. I'm not saying any of that, but I am saying that it did happen and you realize that it is something that shakes you, you know? And that's why when she said at the beginning, she's like, I'm dead inside. So whatever happens from this point on. And that to me has always felt a little true of like, well, after that fell apart, the plans for my life are now, you know, up to whatever happens now. I'm living on not borrowed time, but I'm living on things that I didn't expect to happen. So I don't know what the next step is. You're telling me 2 years ago that I would be like, I'll be doing a Bravo podcast. I couldn't tell you that. I would not even have seen that in the future. I knew I loved Bravo, but I never thought I would be here talking to you one day about it.
Well, I mean, it's a little bit of a sliding doors then, right?
Exactly.
It's like a little bit of the living in a, and possibly in a little bit of a suspended
state. She said she were, and remember, she said she would go, like she would love to, she would sometimes go back, you know, she would have been like, just to have this back, even though it wasn't love, even though I know it wasn't love, or I know it wasn't, just so I could. And I really, I related to that strongly. I was just like, that is very, And so to me, that I was speaking to somebody that I understood. So, but going into that interview this week, I also knew the Jen Shah of it all. And also, I'm not looking, I never do like a gotcha podcast. I'm not looking to get pull quotes. I'm not looking to get an Us Weekly. I mean, I'd geek out if I was, but I'm not looking for that. So I also want to interview Bravo Lebs down the line. Also, Bravo they weren't on the line. Bravo didn't know this was happening. So I was also keenly aware of that. But having said that, she offered up a lot. I mean, she even said, I am not dipping on Jen Shah. And I said, you know how this looks, right? And she said, I do. I'm not stupid. I'm aware of what is going on. Jenna says she's innocent. But even if it turns out she is not, I believe in amends. I believe in making amends. I believe in forgiveness. I believe in, you know, she will be punished. You know, like she said these things, but she said, I will find out. But I'm not, I've never been the person to dip out on a friend. And she really was holding by that. And she, I think, knows, you know, and in fact, I've seen people talk about that and said, oh, I'm out on her. I'm out now. Like that's, but I was trying to look at it from that perspective of, I mean, in fact, I've thought about this a lot this week of like, how far do you go with the friendship and how far, when do you make that call? Like, when do you go, whoa, she is guilty? Because from what Heather is saying, Jen has said, I am innocent. In to a one-on-one conversation with Heather.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's tough when it's examining a friendship, but that friendship is being shown on reality TV. It's that, they're not just a friend. They're a friend and your coworker. Well, you can say you're never going to talk to them, but you still have to film with them. So
she
it's
said,
not-
well, and that's and that was the other crazy thing, too, was she was like, because when I had heard that initial arrest, I was like, oh, filming's done. This there's no second season. This is like that complete. And she goes, she said she thought the same thing. She was like, oh, we're done. Mm. There is no second season at this point, or not for the foreseeable future. And she said she filmed the entire thing. And I was like, well, that could be self-serving. But she said there is something. She showed up, you know, and it doesn't seem like they were like just great with her. So I'll be curious. I think they, and I told her they're in a really rare situation where a lot of people will go into a second season of a show and be like, well, is this gonna be good? Do they have anything to talk about? And now they have one of the most insane things to, like, I mean, I was saying, like, wouldn't it, like, we're at a point where, I mean, who knows? An FBI agent might have a talking head this season. There might be a minor character that is the same FBI agent. You know what I'm saying? Like, we don't know. Like, Bravo probably doesn't know exactly what's going to happen. But having whatever happens here is probably going to really play a part in whatever happens in Beverly Hills at this point, too, in the future.
Yeah, I mean, I think what gives so many people hope is that pre the Tom Michigas, there are so many different storylines and there's so much energy. And my hope is that the rest of the season doesn't become solely about the Erica Jane stuff. And I really don't think it will. I just think this Beverly Hills is having such a strong season that Salt Lake City should take some solace in knowing that you can still have a really great season when crazy shit is going down and is happening, where one day things are normal and the next day it's a whole new world. So
what
you
is
can
funny
still
though,
kind of go on.
I mean, how do you? I mean, you're right, but it'll be interesting to see this next week and what that tone is like. How do you go? How do you go from criminal charges to, I'm Lisa, I have a lip kit, I've been meaning to do this for 15 years. Like, it's just the weight there is so disproportioned, you know?
Right. Yeah, it's going to be a very delicate balancing act. Shout out to those editors who all deserve a bonus.
You
card.
Guys, like, and by the way, there should be a document. I would love a documentary someday about the making of a season of one of these things, because I stay up at night thinking about what they're thinking about. Like, I really, and not even, I would never even, I just want to know. Like, I want to know what conversations were had. I want to know contingency plans that were put into place. I want to know how hard they thought about this. And like, what those conversations to me, it's the same thing with Vanderpump Rules coming back. I want to know what the conversations were. How do you go about fixing a show and then still letting it breathe and be a reality? Like, I want to know what goes into these things.
Well, there was that behind the scenes special for OC's 100th episode or 100th whatever the fuck it was. And it was a behind the scenes special, and people really did go all in. Like, Tamara was very shady to Gretchen. There was like the kids were involved, you know, like their Gina's kids participated. There was a lot that was discussed that was like seemingly very juicy, and it was combo of cast members and production. And it was for some 200th episode. I don't know what the fuck it was, yeah. But it was like some big moment for Orange County, maybe 10 years or something. I really couldn't tell you, which makes me think that there will be more of this. I think that Bravo is very, very sensitive to what kind of information they'll reveal and how they'll package it. And my hope is that we get more. I mean, BravoCon is the greatest example of that. The producers panels at BravoCon are that is exactly what you're looking for. You get in, and it's not on TV. It's like these, well, I'll, you know, 90 I'll see you there. Panels.
I geek out about the, I mean, like, but, well,
you'll love.
I mean, it really is one of those things. And I know Bravo, like you said, is very protective. Anytime I've had Bravo involved in interviewing a Bravo Leb, like, those are the things that I usually have to cut out is when we talk about production. They, mm-hmm. I mean, of course, it's, like, loosened up a little with Bravo, Bravo effing Bravo, and these, like, cut things. But they really want to keep it where you don't realize this is being filmed by actual human people. Like, there mm-hmm. is this edict that is thrown down somewhere along the way. And to me, I think the future is all of that. I think the future is that marriage between production and, you know, audiences are so savvy these days. The Bravo audiences are some of the smartest people I've ever talked to in my life. I try to keep up most of the time. And I just want, I think that is part of the future of the survival of these things, of like really telling the truth. You're trying to show the truth on the screen. So like part of that truth is that this is being filmed, you know?
And I think you began the episode by talking about how do we get more people involved, and maybe we end the episode with this is an example why, or how, for someone who's brand new to Bravo and doesn't totally understand the concept of it or the dedication or conversation, maybe the introduction to the Bravo world through those kinds of conversations where you're combining the plot on TV with the production of the plot on TV, maybe that's a way to get more people involved. It might be just literally that.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, and I think it's all about that and building out the universe. We have this mm-hmm. amazing Bravo universe, but you look at what 90 Day Fiancé has done, whether you like it or hate it, they have built out this universe, this 90 mm-hmm. Day universe now. And you're like, mm-hmm. well, that's great. You wouldn't have expected that 5 years ago when 90 Day Fiancé was on, but they, you know, they realize people want to see what these characters are doing in different iterations. They're giving them GoPros. They're doing this on the cheap. And I know Bravo mm-hmm. has a higher standard in how they film, but that's why I am so proud that Bravo finally are doing things like, Housewife All-Stars or the mashup Summer House mm-hmm. Winter Lucky Charms Captain Crunch. You know, like, a horrible name, but I like the idea. I like it's like,
totally.
Get your head in the game. Start making this feel like a family. It is. So make, you know, we know this universe backwards and forwards, so you can start to play with bending that universe around in different iterations. And I think that's just going to make us more rabid, and then it gives more attention where people are like, what is that thing? That's crazy. You put mm-hmm. a bunch of ladies that have been on a island and just see what happens. Like, I think that's the, you know, throwing things against the wall and seeing what sticks before, you know, because 90 Day at this point, I keep bringing it up, but like they get 3 times the ratings of most Bravo shows. And to me, that is ridiculous. I like 90 Day Fiancé. I watch it. But to me, there's no reason for that to be happening when Bravo has what it has.
Yeah, my only concern would be oversaturation, that there is a specific kind of storytelling that happens with Bravo. And I don't want them to be throwing pasta against the wall, but I do think that they are working out now how to give more to those of us who want more content without actually... They're experimenting with what that content would look like so that we can marry some of these worlds, because there's nothing that all of us love more than to see, you know, I mean, it's like the Andy baby shower. Why wasn't that filmed? So it's
there are these moments. I mean, you're right. It's, I mean,
it will that never make sense, that, that but these are the shows that will happen as a result.
I mean, that is my 4-part Halston series by Ryan Murphy. One day I will make a limited miniseries about the production of Andy's baby shower. Why was John Mayer the only guy there? There are questions that need to be answered that we, and you know, like you said, it's not about throwing the pasta up against the wall. And it's definitely not about the pasta, as we know. Okay, I'll see myself out. I'll see myself out.
Ryan Bailey, a delight as always. Well, where can, how can, what can,
just go,
listen,
just
pod,
go subscribe.
Tell
just,
me.
Just go, So Bad It's Good with Ryan Bailey. There's a lot of content. Just pick and choose. Sarah's on a bunch of episodes. You can start there if you want to start. You know, I had Heather on this week, Danny on this week. Mm. There's some really great discussions. There's some silly stuff. My parents are on it. It's kind of like a weird variety show at times. And we do Kardashians on there. But pick and choose. It's not something that you need to listen to one and figure out to listen to another. You can just kind of start and see what you like and poke around. And if it's your cup of tea, amazing. I welcome you. I think I want you a part of the family. But if not, there's so many amazing podcasts. Like, we're really in this kind of golden age of podcasting, I feel like, we talk about with TV. But with podcasting, so many amazing voices that highlight so many different experiences. And if mine's not, I mean, my experience is what, I'm just like, podcasting. We just want to keep podcasting, you know?
Yes, I agree.
And So Bad It's Good with Ryan Bailey on Instagram. It's just silliness.
There
it's
we
silliness.
Go.
Just silliness.
It's complete silliness with a lot of substance, and I love it. And guys, speaking of love, join the Annie Girls Patreon. 90-minute Patreon bonus episode of this week, plus bonus episodes with Joe Gunn talking about Mayor of Easttown and Bethany Frankel and Leah Palmieri talking about more Mayor of Easttown and hacks and so much. A lot of TV talk, a lot of self-care talk, a lot of talk, girl talk, any kind of talk. Patreon.com/AndyScrolls, the number one way to support the pod, aside from subscribing and leaving AG a 5-star review. Follow me on Instagram at Dame Galley. You know what would be great?
What?
Sorry, at Dame Galley. I didn't even give the full handle, at Dame Galley. So hair appointment in a couple weeks. There's no way this is going to happen, but I would really like to get to, if this could happen. Okay, let's keep things optimistic.
Oh, 10,000 followers.
100%. But in the meantime, en route to 10, I would like to get to 7,000 followers before my hair appointment.
Oh, yeah.
Because while I still have a blowout, I want to go to Party City and maybe not buy the balloon that says 7, but certainly ask if I can hold it and then take a really great photo because I'm the cheapest person alive. I want to do it. So, guys, if you're not following me on Instagram, force your friends, log into your parents, whatever. They don't know where they are. So just
wait,
add
and also
me.
Just create multiple accounts, you guys. Like, if which Andy's gal will, whoever can create 1,000 accounts is going to be the top Andy's gal for the month.
We're just talking 300 follows
so
between
quick.
Now and my hair color's on the 12th. No,
wait,
no,
wait,
my
wait,
haircut's
wait.
On the 12th. My color's on the 14th. Like,
if we
come
can,
on.
If we can get you to 10 before then, would you shave 10 into your head?
I would shave 10 literally wherever.
Oh, my God.
Literally.
Oh, my God.
Wherever.
Oh, my God. I feel like we're losing Patreon subscribers
violated.
At this point. Yeah.
No, they love it. I just got three more. Guys, I hope you're staying safe and sane, getting vaccinated if you can. Ryan Bailey, you know you're wonderful. I hope you know you're wonderful.
I don't know that,
you know,
but thank you.
You're wonderful.
Have I told you lately that I love you?
On that note, guys, we'll talk to you soon.
Bye.
Bye-bye.